Happy Friday, everyone. We're getting our Friday Wintrust Business Lunch off to a great start, as always, here on 720 WGN. And before we get to our first guest, Ben Meyerson, I want to ask people out there, feel free to text on in 312-981-7200. Please let us know if you have any financial resolutions for 2018. What are you going to do in 2018? I know we all make resolutions about losing weight or exercising more or whatever it might be, but it's a great time to kind of relook at all of our finances and try and determine what we're going to change for next year. It can be little things. I don't care how much money you have or how little money you have. I think there's little things that we all can do to kind of tidy up our finances. So I'd love to hear from you guys, 312-981-7200. And without getting too deep into your personal life, Ben Meyerson, you got anything like that there's a goal in mind that you want to change for next year financially?
Well, we talked about this a little bit last week, but I have to decide once and for all if I'm going to buy Bitcoin or not.
You're going to decide? Well, that's something that kind of changes hour by hour, I imagine. I haven't checked it in a while. Where are we at now with Bitcoin? Have you looked?
I think it's back up around 15,000 or something like that. I don't know. It's just nuts.
It's I don't know how much I'm considering the same thing, whether I should, you know, there's like a little sum of money I kind of want to put into it, but it's almost such a high risk, high reward. Not that I'd be afraid of losing that little sum of money that I'm willing to put into it. My worry would be that if that little sum of money turned into a fairly substantial amount, all I would feel is regret that I didn't put in more. So it's almost not even worth it to put in the little amount because it would just fill me with regret that I didn't put in more.
It's regret all the way down.
All right, we're talking with Ben Meyerson from the Tribune of Blue Sky Innovation. And Ben, let's talk about a story that Orion mentioned. Apple coming out with some pretty big news to play a little bit of a, I don't want to say catch up, they're playing a little bit of a damage control after the news broke, of course, that they finally revealed that their battery life was in fact slowing down in old phones, right?
Yeah, so essentially what's been happening is for years people have been saying, oh, old iPhones get slow, they're doing it on purpose, they want to make me get a new phone. Well, some folks in the Apple tech sleuth industry actually went and ran some tests on some phones and found that there actually was a software update that came out a few years ago that showed that as batteries get older on phones, Apple was slowing them down. Now, there's a very good reason for that. When batteries get older, they can't handle as much output. They can't actually physically put out as much energy as they used to. So that means, like, if you're doing something that's really intense on your phone, taking a video in slow motion or visiting a particularly high traffic or website with a bunch of sparkles on it...
Is that the technical term?
That's the technical term.
A website with sparkles.
Sparkles, mm-hmm. A sparkly website. Now, if you're visiting a website like that or something along those lines, that needs more energy, and that can be problematic for an older battery. Because as batteries get older, they don't hold as much charge, as everyone knows. So Apple created a workaround that so that your phone doesn't automatically shut down, which is a thing that happens with old batteries. It happened with my old phone, actually. So Apple made it so that your phone would run slower, so you didn't have those automatic shutdowns at inopportune times. But the problem was they didn't tell anybody about it.
Right, and so then people draw their own nefarious conclusions.
Exactly.
So people would think that Apple was purposely slowing down their batteries just so people could buy new phones, or it would force people. It would force their hand. They'd say, I'm so sick of this, I need to buy a new phone.
Exactly, which probably was happening. I know for me, again, my iPhone 6 was running really slow, and I actually was having those shutdowns mm-hmm. because I did have an older battery that was the end of its life. But
mine would go to 20% and then it'd be done, and I'd be like, what the heck happened?
I was at like 80%. But that's why that's why they had this software update that would slow your phone down, so you wouldn't have those automatic sudden deaths mm-hmm. at 80% or 20% mm-hmm. or whatever. Mm-hmm. But again, they didn't tell anybody that. And so when it was found out by some basic internet sleuths, now that creates problems for Apple because it looks like they're hiding it.
Right. So last week or the week before, they came out and admitted, after this report it had been kind of sitting out there for 5 or 6 months, they said admitted that, yes, that this problem had existed. And then there was obviously pushback. I don't know if they saw much of a significant drop in their stock price. But what have they decided now that they're going to do to kind of resolve the situation?
Well, there was enough backlash from the story going beyond the usual tech blogs and the, you know, your corners of Reddit and whatnot, going onto morning shows and to major newspapers like the Chicago Tribune, that Apple decided decided they had to respond to it. Mm-hmm. And so at first they apologized. And then yesterday, actually last night, after about a week of the outrage cycle over the holidays, Apple said, okay, we are going to actually discount battery prices if you want to get your battery replaced for the next year. So instead of it being $79, which is what they have charged, now they're going to charge $29.
Okay. Pretty significant drop.
Yeah, it is. And it's actually – it's in line with what a lot of the third-party stores around the city will do. You know, if you see that your cell phone store on the corner says, oh, we'll replace your screen, we'll replace your battery, that's about what a lot of those third-party stores have charged. So Apple is bringing their services more into line with that.
So for $29, you can vastly improve your old phone versus the $79 or the much more expensive cost of having to get a new phone altogether.
Exactly. And I know when – again, when my 6 was slowing down and I was having battery problems, I thought, okay, well, do I want to spend $79 to get my battery replaced, or do I want to and still have a relatively older phone that's slower theoretically? Mm-hmm. Or do I want to draw? Or do I want to just go get the new phone?
Yeah.
Which at that time I actually did. I went and I bought an iPhone 8. Now, if I had seen this story first, if I had seen this confirmed, I might have made a different decision.
Right, because when you're at $79, you start playing the game of it's like when you have a car that has one thing that's wrong with it. You're like, do I spend X amount of dollars, or do I just go after a new used car or something? Because if you spend X amount of dollars, who knows if there'd be another problem down the line? And then you start getting into the investment thing. But yeah, $29 seems like something you could pull out of your wallet for most people and solve your problems.
Exactly. And you know, on top of all this, there's also a ton of lawsuits that have been filed that may have also been
yes. And the lawsuits are, what do they claim? That the practice of them not admitting this, not being forthright about it, that's the challenge that they're having in court? Or are they saying that they were misled by Apple in some way?
The logic is different in different places. Some of the lawsuits claim the more nefarious implications, just that that they're intentionally being slowed down in order to make people buy new phones. Some just say that there is an implicit contract when you buy a device that the manufacturer is not going to tinker with it to slow it down without your permission.
Something we'll have to keep on following for sure.
There's a lawsuit in Illinois, but there's also one in France. Interestingly, there's a law against planned obsolescence, as they call it, basically intentionally slowing it down. And in France, they could face jail time.
Who would go to jail?
I don't know.
Like the poor guy at the Apple store, they'd ring him on up, the guy who sold you the phone or the battery?
Probably.
Yeah, I think that's what they'll run on up. Okay, Ben Meyerson, you're going to stick around because we have some more fascinating topics. By the way, 312-981-7200, we want to hear your financial goals for 2018. We do have one text. My financial resolution is to pay down credit card debt. I've already cut the cards up and now only use my debit card, but the damage is done. Time to pay these cards with the high interest rates down. Yes, and pay the ones with the high interest rates. You go, 224. I am cheering with you. WGN, John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch, joined by Ben Meyerson of the Trib and Blue Sky Innovation. This next story, Ben, what I do? You're shaking your head there.
No, I'm just dry. I keep my arm keeps falling off this chair.
Oh, okay. Just making sure something I didn't do. Okay, so Ben, this next story is something. I mean, I don't like to admit things that I do here that are immoral or wrong, but I will share openly to the radio folks. I am someone that, yes, has shared a password to a TV account that I might have to give to someone to be able to watch a sporting event or something online where they wouldn't have access to it without the cable account. And I always think of it as, oh, I'm just the little guy fighting the man in a way, and I want my friend to be able to watch the Hawks or whatever it is. This thing, doing that is very prevalent, and it costs these companies billions of dollars.
Yeah, we've got a report, a story on our website, blueskyinnovation.com, right now. Basically, that says that one-third of all internet users, one-third, they all share passwords. They've shared a password to your cable login and use that for HBO Go, for ESPN. There's numerous other apps, Fox, FX, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And what the cable companies, or at least a few of them, are not happy with this practice,
right,
as you might imagine.
Well, they're just saying that this is our product. People pay for it. It's not fair that people can get it for free. But my thing I always am wondering is, how the heck, I've shared my password sometimes for games to like 9 people. And I'm like, this can't possibly work for all 9 of you. And it does. And it's the question is, are they going to start reducing the number of streaming capabilities that one account can have?
Yeah, well, there's the CEO of Charter Communications, which sells cable under the Spectrum Charm brand. Mm-hmm. They say that there's one channel he didn't identify that one user had 30,000 simultaneous streams from one account.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Isn't there someone in some building somewhere with a computer in front of them? And they, like, I picture it in the movies, like they say, oh, like there's a red phone they need to pick up and be like, there's 30,000 streams going, shut them all down.
Shut it down.
Yeah. How is that not, how is it not done?
I don't know. Well, there are some channels that do have limitations.
Right.
So, you know, ESPN, they used to let 10 people log in from the same account. They've cut it down to 5 recently. Netflix actually rations it out pretty.
Yeah, they're pretty strict about it. I think it's like 4 for some higher accounts, and some are only 1 if you buy the lowest account.
Exactly. And HBO is trying to find the number here. HBO lets 3 people stream simultaneously.
My question is, do they worry that if they limit the number of streams that are given out, that it could potentially hamper the user experience to the point that someone say, you know, starting to log in, and if they can't do it, they're like, well, forget this, I'm canceling the subscription.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's what a lot of, or at least one particular company does. So the company that actually runs HBO Go, they created on behalf of HBO, and they partner with people like Dish and PlayStation. That's their concern. Of course, they're not necessarily selling the product itself, the entertainment. They're selling the system, so they want more people to be using their platform.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the concern that they have is, you know, I'd hate to see this go the other way and become a bad consumer experience, and people wonder, why can't my son access the TV, is what the CEO of this company called Cinecore said.
Mm-hmm. Is there a way to quantify exactly how many billions of dollars are lost by this?
You know, John, as a matter of fact, we have those numbers.
It's almost like I read the story and I knew that number was
exactly
going to be there.
Yeah, so basically the companies say, or Charter estimates that $3.5 billion have been lost this year, but by 2021, that number could be $9.9 billion.
So what's the answer? Is it limiting the streams, or is it kind of just finding that fine line between limiting the streams, but also keeping the user experience positive?
I think that's the rub there, is just figuring out exactly where the line is. You don't want mom to be mad that her kid can't take advantage of the service that she's paid for,
mm-hmm.
and mom become a cord cutter herself, so to
speak.
But at the same time, you know, you don't want 30,000 people on one account. I think that's a reasonable, there's some room for compromise in the middle there.
I think the whole thing is interesting because there's people of like my parents' generation and their cable bill. I can't believe how much they pay for cable, but they seem happy with it. They're obviously financially in a good position, so they're just totally fine with it. But as our generation, where a lot of my friends are cutting their cord, they haven't had TV subscriptions for years. As that generation grows into their 40s and 50s, where this whole thing will line up.
Yeah, and there's so many different options out there for signing up for alternative services. The cable companies are really going to be hesitant about where they draw that line. Again, you've got companies like Google jumping in with their own streaming service for live TV through YouTube. Hulu has their own live TV service right now. So there's a lot of places that are getting in on this. And the space is becoming increasingly competitive.
We have like 30 seconds just for this last story. I want to mention, I know that's not a ton of time, but Facebook users, we're talking more about pages, people that have a public page or a business has a page. Facebook doesn't want them to no longer kind of solicit for likes and shares, right?
Yeah, don't post anything. If you're a small business, don't say, like this post or comment, like if you agree, comment if you really agree.
Right. Yeah. Share this if you want to win a car or something
exactly.
That. They're going to curb that and find a way in the algorithm to cut those out,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Facebook's going to shut that down or at least make you pay for it.
But if you have pictures of your cute kids, you're going to be fine personally, right?
Exactly. If it's something that gets those likes just because you're warming people's hearts, then you're still in good shape.
That's what my Facebook is all about. Ben, where can people find more information about all these stories and more?
You can go to blueskyinnovation.com or just chicagotribune.com/bluesky.
And let's give out your personal Twitter account. Come on.
Oh, you can find me at B Meyerson, MEYERSON.
All right, Ben, thanks so much for your time, okay?
Thank you, John.
Have a great new year. Plenty more Winter's Business Lunch coming up after this. Seven twenty WGN. John Hanson filling in for Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch. 312-981-7200. What are your financial resolutions for 2018? We've been sharing some of them, and they all have to do with credit card debt so far. Matt Shockman is my next guest, and Matt started. Your life starts in Wilmette. It is now in Winnetka, but there's a lot in between. A really great story, Matt. Welcome to the program.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me. Happy New Year.
You're a military man. Talk about your journey and why you got into the military and the adventures you've been on.
Yeah, sure. So, played hockey for a couple years between high school and college. 9/11 happened, and decided that that was going to West Point was the way to live out my childhood dream of playing Division I hockey, and you know, my long term goals of selfless service to the nation. So, went there, got commissioned, spent 24 months doing counterinsurgency in Iraq and Afghanistan, and then decided to transition back to the civilian sector and went to Kellogg for Business School next.
Well, we thank you for your sacrifices and your services over the many years in the military, of course. And you have a lot of awards here, which are a lot of letters together all in a row. I don't know what any of these awards means. I need to go up them, but I thank you again, and we really appreciate it. And I got to ask you, this is something that we love to ask veterans because I think it's an important thing that we all can learn from and all work together on. What was that transition like back where you? Was it a smooth transition? Was it difficult, or did you hit the ground running right when you got back?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that it's different for everyone. I was incredibly lucky to have a really strong support network of family and friends to help me. And then, you know, the community that I had at school also was very helpful in the more specific kind of professional transition as, you know, someone from the military going in to get a job, and then family and friends on the personal side. So I think, you know, the thing that everybody can do is just try and listen, understand other people's perspectives, and no two journeys are the same, but just knowing that people are there and support you is really helpful. So
another transition you went through was from an investment banker at Bank of America, mergers and acquisitions and other things along those lines, to becoming a CEO and starting your own business. Why did you make that leap?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, I had done the most important thing I'll probably ever do professionally, which is lead soldiers in combat. And I was too old to become a doctor, and I had no philosophical interest in being a theologian. So
that's a lot of money in theologian. I don't think either. So
no, and so I figured, you know, helping people get jobs was probably about the highest utility activity I could have for society. And look, I love people, love talking to people, love helping, making connections, and ultimately, you know, we're matchmakers in helping get people to find a better employment source.
And when you say where, you're talking about Chamberlain Advisors.
Yes, exactly.
And what do you guys do exactly?
So, well, our job is to help create liquidity and transparency in the labor market. More specifically, our mission is to help our clients win by improving their process and technology through the most important resource, people. And that means that, you know, we have to really be advocates for both candidates looking for employment and then our clients who are looking to improve the caliber of people they have on their teams, and then make those matches. So,
how much of your military background does come into play in the mission and what you guys do at Chamberlain?
Oh, I mean, everything and every day. You know, you learn servant leadership and the importance of people. And look, even our mission statement, right? Companies want to improve their top process and technology, but that only happens no matter, even if it's machine learning or AI, you're going to have someone somewhere implementing that, and knowing that at the core, everything comes down to the people is something that we're founded on and has led us, you know, both in trying to attract the right kind of people internally on our team and then also make the right kind of connections for our clients and finding the right technical and cultural fit for their mission needs.
We mentioned that transition from military life to civilian life, and a lot of veterans, unfortunately, face a lot of difficulties coming back. And one of those is finding good jobs and being valued as they should be for the many skills they learned in the military. So being a military man at Chamberlain, do you seek out recruitment opportunities for people in the military, or do you focus just on the general population, or a mix of both?
Absolutely. So there are a lot of great organizations, profit and nonprofit, 100% focused on veterans. One of the things that I saw where I thought there was more of a gap in the market was taking the perspective of becoming the trusted advisor to clients and understanding the cultural and technical requirements to be successful in their organization, and then pulling the right specific niche skills from people within the military, right? Because I like to tell people, if you say you're in finance, well, were you a bank teller, an investment banker, a trader, or writing algos for, you know, some kind of program, right? And the job diversity within people from the military is even wider than that. And having that more focused way of helping companies find the specific skills that they're looking for once you become their trusted advisor, kind of angle we've taken.
That's fascinating, because if someone were, if I were to say, what are the skills of someone in the military? I'd say, well, there's leadership. They know their way around XYZ. They're on time. They know how to get things done. And that's speaking from a civilian mind. You, coming from the military, you know exactly what that skill is and where it would fit best and used well.
Sure. I mean, you know, E5, which is a sergeant in the Army, infantryman, so 11 Bravo, there's probably like three different jobs that they could be doing that look the same on the resume to anyone else, but have slightly different strengths, weaknesses, and things that we can test for depending on the exact cultural and technical needs of a client. So that kind of niche knowledge, frankly, which we also bring to helping clients understand kind of the raw building blocks of the requirement that they're looking to fill, helps us whether we're placing a military person or anyone, or a veteran or someone else, because we can really break things down into those raw building blocks to be successful and then make those connections.
As a leader in the military, I imagine you have a lot of people underneath you from a variety of backgrounds, of religions, creed, colors, and it's a very diverse military in many ways. Does that skill that you learned leading that wide, diverse group of people help you and Chamberlain in this current situation?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, we had a saying when we were in Iraq called, you know, listen first, and trying to understand the perspectives of sheikhs or the local police. And, you know, my they said, hey, fix the economy, fix the government, make sure there's a safe provincial election. Here's a 40-man platoon. Let us know if you need anything. And that kind of diverse set of requirements was something that really helped frame the way we look at understanding and listening first to our clients and understanding what they really need, and then asking good questions in order to then do the same thing with the candidates in order to make good connections versus trying to, quote unquote, sell someone who may not be the right fit.
Chamberlain's goal is to provide full cycle opportunities for companies. What do you mean by full cycle?
Sure. So if a company is looking to bring someone on full time, we'll do that search for them on the placement side, and then staffing, if, you know, people have, lots of companies have requirements, 6-12 months.
I see.
And so we'll, you know, provide those staffing solutions as well.
Where can people find out more information about Chamberlain?
Sure. So LinkedIn, Chamberlain Advisors. We, as I said, we were named one of the 25 most socially engaged staffing companies by them. So try and get all the traffic there. That's where most people are interacting in order to find jobs, and that's the best place to go find us. And then chamberlainstaffing.com will also have a list of all the current job openings we have.
Does it mean a lot for you to be back in your hometown doing this?
Oh, I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I love the city. Chicago sports fanatic.
You get your Blackhawks zip up right on right now.
Oh yeah, Santa brought it for me a couple days ago.
What's going on? They won 5 in a row, 3 losses in a row. Now they got to get it together.
I trust Coach Q, so he'll figure it out.
They've given us no reason not to. Matt Schachman, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Hey, thanks.
Plenty more coming up next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. 720 WGN, John Hansen filling in for Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We got Daniel coming in at 1 o'clock. We'll be anxious to hear what he's got on the program. Next up, we're talking about the Local Initiatives Support Corporation, LISC. Chicago coordinates the work of community organizations across the city. What they do is they kind of inventory vacant foreclosed properties and target areas, identify owners of troubled properties, and present recommendations to city officials. We'll get a little more on what exactly all of that means and what they do. And we're joined by Steve Hall from the organization. Steve, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, John?
Good, Steve. It's great to chat with you. So let's put this all in layman's terms. What exactly, you know, how do you guys coordinate these efforts to find these homes, these properties, and try and fill them and build up blighted streets into vibrant communities?
Well, I mean, one of the things we do, we work with a lot of local not-for-profit organizations, community-backed communities, to find blighted homes, blighted commercial properties, and we look to transform those communities to make them great Chicago communities.
So when you say you work with nonprofit organizations, does it mean that a lot of the nonprofit organizations across the city have a specific knowledge about a specific property or a few properties in a row or a specific street, and you guys are able to take that information and connect the dots a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, we're a national not-for-profit, so we work with a lot of grassroots partners, and those partners, they have a pulse in that community. So whether it's Brighton Park or Alton Gresham, there's a community there that may not have the financial resources to help with the transformation, but maybe they know how to, you know, point us in the right direction so we can start that transformative process.
And what does that transformative process look like? Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it's, buying, one home, maybe a building, look to make it a affordable housing opportunity for the community. Maybe it's a former, CHA site, and the site, needs a new investment or a new strategy. Maybe we can, collectively bring in some of our resources and private developers and make that a viable community for all.
What I love about organizations like yours and what you guys do is, look, we could look at the whole massive problem of all the vacant buildings in Chicago, the dilapidated, rundown buildings, and you kind of become overwhelmed by them. You can look at a whole community and see blocks where you have a lot of issues. But you guys, literally help connect the dots to kind of fill these homes one at a time. You don't look at, you obviously are looking at the bigger problem, but you're solving it by doing very, not small scale things, but, one kind of one building, one street at a time in many ways.
But yeah, sometimes it's one street at a time, and honestly, sometimes it's one block at a time. So we're one of the largest recipients of New Markets Tax Credits, which allow us to do, really large transformative projects in a lot of communities, and we're one of the largest recipients of low-income housing tax credits. So with particular programs that we offer through LIS, we can transform, a big factory into a great working space for multiple entrepreneurs, or we can take a, 100-unit residential apartment building and make it a great, living space for seniors.
And one of the things you guys do is to help this along is you guys provide some sort of purchase assistance, right? How does that work?
For the smaller transactions, we will invest into another not-for-profit locally and have them do either first-time home buyer program, or they'll have a housing credit, maybe $3,000 or $4,000. And if it's a larger business, we would actually inject New Markets tax credit equity, so that business wouldn't have to put down a down payment if they wanted to open up a factory in a low to moderate income community.
Is there any way to kind of quantify just how many homes or businesses or areas we're talking about in Chicago that you guys have worked with? I know that's probably a big number. You can start counting them one by one. We don't have too much time, but if you had to even estimate, just so people can kind of get a grasp of how much work you guys have done.
I want to say in Chicago, maybe we've impacted over 10,000 households, and I want to say we've helped over, 200 businesses. So that's a pretty significant number, and I know there are a lot of great organizations that we have partnered with to achieve those outcomes. But at the same time, I think our collaborative efforts to, bring in those key community partners allows the Chicago to be one of the key funders for major change in most communities.
Steve, we could probably talk about this for an hour, and I promise you we'll get to do that another time when I get to fill in. And we really appreciate your time. And for more information, go to lisc-chicago.org. And Steve Hall, we appreciate your time today, and have a happy new year.
Hey, John, same to you. Thank you very much.
All right, we're going to wrap things up next on the Wintrust Business Lunch.